Happy New 2009. Day 2.
This is not going to tax your brain. And that's the point of it. It's supposed to be pretty easy to use. So I'm going to talk about faster maps with the Google Static Maps API. How many of you here had even heard of the Google Static Maps API? Well, that's good. Oh, I know you did. So just in general, what makes a good API? I mean, there's a lot of things, but I kind of summarized it. One is that it's accurate. It provides some sort of accurate function. It's easy to use. That's something that I'm concerned with. I'm not an engineer. I should let everybody know that. I'm a technical writer, so I write all the technical documentation for the Google Maps API. And I'm particularly concerned with ease of use. One is the functionality, of course, you know, if something doesn't do something. And the last one is speed. Now, as far as your mapping options, you know, you have the Google Maps website. That's for end users. That's perfectly fine for most people if they want to find something. But what else can you use maps for? One is you can put your personal data. So we provide maplets, which are a way that people can put their own little data and make their and put it on Google Maps, so it's presented that way. But what if a business wants to share info with somebody else, or what if you, as a personal person, want to share your data? We have the JavaScript Maps API. Now, how many people have heard of the Google Maps JavaScript API? All right, I think that's a lot more people. Obviously, it's a pretty popular API. It satisfies all of those cases. It's accurate, it's easy to use, it's functional, and it's speedy, too, on standard desktops. But in particular, this conference is concerned in a large part with mobile. Mobile devices present a challenge, especially in Australia, I found out. You can tell I'm not a native here. I'm originally from New York. Particular mobile device issues are low bandwidth. You get that. We just don't, the pipes aren't that big here, especially if you're fetching something all the way from New York. The other one is high latency, and those two are completely separate issues. In particular, that affects APIs that make a lot of requests, because if you add a lot of latency, you're going to be making a lot of requests, and all of that is going to be multiplied together. And then there's low CPU power, especially for JavaScript parsing. And that's why a lot of the mobile devices don't have very robust JavaScript parsing. Another reason is they don't want to have window management and DOM management issues. Support for JavaScript and Flash, CSS, HTML is pretty spotty on mobile devices. The best devices out there are the Android phone, our personal favorite, and, of course, the iPhone. So what do we do about these devices? One thing we can do is provide the Static Maps API. What it does instead of writing JavaScript is provides a static map as an image. It basically comes back as a GIF. It's ideal for low bandwidth, high latency, low-end devices, because all you're doing is requesting an image and getting an image back. There's no need for JavaScript, and it's pretty easy to program. Obviously, it's an image, so you can't really manipulate an image. That's why it's called the Static Maps API. So the Static Maps API is initiated via an HTTP service. So that's an example URL there. So basically, it's just from the maps.google.com domain. You append static maps or static map, question mark, and then pass your query parameters. I'll step through a little bit of this. You actually don't need that many query parameters. We've gotten a lot smarter about what we can do. But for the minimum here, we provided a center, which is a latitude longitude value. And that's for this location here in Piermont. And we provided a set of markers. There's one marker here, which is set at that latitude longitude value. We make it red. There's a little comma there. And we zoom to size 13. It's wrapping. I've also set the size to the typical Android and iPhone size, which is 320 by 480. You will need a key, and that's why I was concerned about getting a VPN. You will need a key serving it from your domain. Now, Peter, you mentioned that static maps will have to, I can't remember the key constraints for a static map, if they're quite different or not. If you host the image on the domain, as long as you do that, it's fine. So I'll give you just a quick little demo here. It's not that. Whoops. That wasn't a very good demo. Why is that? There's the demo. And I'm getting a little... so obviously we're constrained a little bit by screen resolution. Here's something where an actual mobile device has better screen resolution than the one I can present at. But this is actually a small image, 320 by 480. You also saw how fast it loaded. That's remarkably fast. It's going to be a lot faster than the JavaScript. And you can see that it dynamically created that image on Google's server with those constraints, created a marker right there, plop, instant. So there are a number of features for the static maps. I didn't pass a mobile roadmap type, but the standard map type is a roadmap, but you can also get mobile map types, which are basically have different graphics for showing up on smaller devices, because the screen resolutions are the same as a desktop, but the screens are much smaller. So the roads will be fatter, for example, stuff like that. We also have satellite maps and terrain maps, as you've seen on Google Maps. And we've also launched, I think, the Map Maker tiles, which are these volunteers from, like, in third world countries, like in Asia and in Africa, who have created great map tiles for us. So we offer those as a separate tile set if you want to get those. And that's pretty good, because if you're in a place like Kenya, they probably don't have very good bandwidth either. So it loads quickly. The image is constructed on the server. Another thing is that it's faster the second time. That's because there are a variety of ways that it could be cached, but it could be cached in your browser, it'll be cached at the proxies, it might even be cached at your ISP. So it works out well, especially if you're testing out a site. You know, hit refresh. So it has a number of use cases, as you can probably see. It's specifically important for small maps, a map that's trying to show one or a few things. Not designed for interactivity. So homepage intro maps, something you might see on the New York Times or CNN. Store maps, where are my stores? These are my stores. You know, I'm not going to be adding stores on a daily basis, so I can probably get away with creating a static map for that. News events, what's going on in certain places. Anytime you want one map, basically. In particular, one of the ones that we found is people use this for real estate. So people use this, if they show a house, they show a little snippet of exactly where it is. If they want to find out more information, they'll click on that map. You can make the image, you can have the image have an href, and then that'll go to actually their full JavaScript API application. And you don't have to create them from scratch. I think Pamela created this, but it's a static map wizard. Do people get these slides afterwards? Do I pass these URLs around? I'll post these on code.google.com. All right. And if you don't find them, you can go to code.google.com/APIs/maps and look under presentations, and you'll find this. This is a static map wizard, and I'm going to maximize this, I would hope. How do I map some? Just go up there and do that. So this is being hosted on code.google.com as well, so you can find this. And basically what you want to do is navigate to a certain place. I'll do something different because I just did that. So it'll create a map there. You can fudge around with it. You can clear the marker. You can add polygons if you wish. You can do little things. Where is it? I can't remember how to do that. Whoops. You can change the size. You can change the color of the marker. You can change whether the markers display certain keys. If you're adding like about six different markers, let's say you have a store locator and you have six different stores, you can label the markers A through F. And then have a little key on the side that says exactly what their address and location is. And you can also change the polygon and polyline for paths information. Once you have that, just plop away, and at the very bottom of this page, which is... it'll create that URL for you. So all you need to do is copy that URL, put it into whatever page you want, and then make sure to add your own key that you can get on code.google.com as well. Another service that we offer, and I'm going to tie these two together so there's no suspense. Static Maps is an HTTP service. It's done strictly through an HTTP URL. We have another service, which is the geocoding service. And geocoding is a process of mapping addresses to latitudes and longitudes. There are a lot of different geocoding services. The advantage of ours, I would say, is that we have a lot of good data. And this is a pretty good set of data there, and we refine it all the time. An example of a geocode here is, this is my home office, which is in New York, which is 111 8th Avenue, New York, New York. If a geocoding service will turn that into that latitude and longitude value. And of course, then you can use that latitude and longitude value on a map to display a marker. The geocoding service outputs to JSON, which is the default, which is particularly useful if you're going to be using it within the JavaScript Maps API. JSON is also a pretty compact format, and it's pretty easy to understand. We also output to KML if you want to put it into Google Earth or any other KML application. And you can also output to CSV if you just want to store the data and then use it later. I'll be doing an example that does that later on. The geocoding service is easy to use programmatically. It's very similar to what the static map service is like, and I'll give you another demo for that right now. Which is... So you can't quite see the URL, but instead of static map, the service is initiated with a geo tag. So it's geo question mark, and then I have a little query here, a query parameter. And I'm doing the Google office across the street, which is 48 Parama Road. Or I'm not, because Firefox decided to flake on me. Sorry about that, folks. I did that first, so if it doesn't crash, at least you get the idea. So as you can see here, I'm getting a JSON, which is pretty easy to parse. It's human readable, and it's pretty much just text. So you can parse it with any Python 2.6 now has JSON in it, so I'm going to be using that. I don't know if 3.0 has been released. I'm not sure about that. You see here we got the name, which is usually the original query, but sometimes it could be slightly different, especially if Google's very good about if you do a query and you're not quite right, if you can figure it out, it'll adjust it for you. Like if it gives you a location that actually is in the city but is just a little bit outside. And it gave back a 200, which means it was successful and it was a geocode. And it gives you back a place mark. This will look very familiar. This is JSON, but this is very KML-like. In KML, you would have these as place marks as well. In fact, I can go up into that URL and do and it would open KML. I'm not going to open that right now. Save you some time. Let's see. So here's the example in case the internet was down. So geocoding use cases. Obviously, you know, if you have a store locator, and that's what I'm going to kind of use as the test case here, you can address your stores that way. We recommend that you actually, if you have static geocoding, that you do it up front. If you're familiar with the JavaScript API, we also provide a geocoding client, but that's usually used for dynamic address lookup. Let's say you want to have a user look up their address. You're not going to geocode all of those addresses statically. You're going to want to do those dynamically. But if you have five stores, you know where they are, and they're going to kind of sit there. So you can go ahead and do them beforehand. It's good for mobile address lookup because it's very compact. And mobile location detection, whatever mobile device you have with a GPS, if you provide it, it provides it as lat long. So what we now offer, we offer reverse geocoding, which instead of in the query parameter of putting in an address, you would put in a latitude and longitude. And what it would do then is it would return you a list of possible addresses, with the first one, of course, being the best possible match. And that would be the format there. You realize it's the same query parameter as the address, but instead of passing it a text field, it's passing it latitude and longitude. So it's pretty smart about figuring out that that text is not an address but a latitude and longitude. So I will go ahead and do the New York one. And this was for the location of my home office. I'm at 111 8th Avenue, and it's pretty good. So you can say I gave it that geocode, and the first result that it gave back was 124 8th Avenue. Reason that one probably was more prominent is it's probably a more definable place in our index. And you'll see there's multiple place marks. There's one with IDP1, there's one with IDP2, and that returned the neighborhood. Generally, what it will do is it will give you the most specific point first, and as it goes down, it might give you the neighborhood, the state, the country. And there's a lot of meta information contained within there, including the extended data, which would define the bounds of the object. And that's important when you start talking about neighborhoods, so you know how to present the data that gets back. So that's pretty useful, especially for a mobile device, because people will be doing that. They'll have a mobile device. They'll say, you know, what's my latitude and longitude right now? You can, in your application, query that location, tell them where they are, and then also tell them where their closest store is, for example. So I talked about some of those before. Some of these apply to static maps, and they apply to geocoding as well. You can show maps of your stores. You can geocode those locations. You can have the real estate thumbnails should have been in the static maps. But you can find out where the houses are. What we're going to do now is we're going to combine the static maps and the geocoding APIs together to do a real world test case. So what I'm going to do here is, let's say you have five stores and they're located in various neighborhoods in Sydney. How can I get a static map of all five of those stores quickly? And I'll be doing this with Python 2.6 because that one has JSON. I'm taking this talk over from Aaron, and he made me specify that I better warn you about that. Because I was trying Python 2.5 and it wasn't working, and I was wondering why. So I'll go ahead and do that. And hopefully this will work over the VPN. All right. So the reason I picked that is Python's a pretty easy language to understand, and it's pretty readable. So what we're doing here is I'm importing the URL library from Python. I'm giving it a query for Pyrmont, New South Wales, and providing the key. And I'm basically encoding the URL, and then I'm fetching that URL programmatically. And once that works, it'll give me back my original query and what I returned. So it works. So it's obviously scrolling a little bit off screen, but you can tell that worked. So what else can we do? Well, I could show you the same thing, but returning KML. And you can see this is pretty similar to what was provided before. So all I did there was change the output KML and pass it through. So what's the next thing to do? So I can geocode places, big deal. Let's say that's the user's location. What I want to do is then do a geocode of that. I want to do a reverse geocode of that. So given a lat long, the query, geocode it, bring it back. All I'm doing is doing a circular little arrangement here. And there I got. So what I did there is, instead of returning the whole big list, I went through the JSON that was returned, searched for the coordinates that are being returned, parsed just those, and returned those back. Because obviously, if you're going to be doing this on an application, you don't want to get back that whole mess of information. So all I'm doing is adding a little parse function to that. So that's pretty useful. So we got something now that if I put in a query and put it on the command line, I can run something and get something back. So let's say I have five different stores, and one thing I want to do is put those in a database. So most people are familiar with CSV, and you can open it up in Excel or Google Docs or any other spreadsheet application. So I'm going to be doing that with CSV, and I'll show you some of the code to do that. Maybe I should show you what's going on first. So I'll run it and then explain it. I'm getting a little bit ahead of the game. I'm just going to collect my store data here. So what's going on? Taking some time and returned. Nothing happened. Actually, what happened is I created that CSV file. So I'm going to explain what's going on there. If I open it up right now, you'll see I have the different neighborhoods and their geocodes in a CSV file. It wasn't just magic. It was this code here. So you can tell this is pretty simple. I basically create a file name, which is what's going to be the result. And I put my store locations in an array. So these are the things that I want to geocode. I import the urlib library. There is a CSV library in Python, which is useful, and there's also a JSON library. So then I create a geocode writer. I don't know if you're all familiar with the Python. That's probably the most difficult part to understand here. But basically, I'm opening in that file up for writing. And then I just iterate through that array. For each item in the store locations, I do that geocode. And you saw before that I was pulling out the latitude and longitude values. So once I do that, I just write those to the CSV file. So it's pretty easy to understand, and it's also pretty quick. So what do we want to do now? Well, we probably want to create a static map. Now, you could just go ahead and, use that URL, put in the markers, hand type, lat longs. You don't need to do that when you can get code. So what I'm going to do right here is show you the static map Python, which is going to be similar to what you've seen before. But what I do here is I define the parameters for the static map, the center, the zoom, the size, the map type, mobile. I'm also going to get my store locations. I set markers initially null. And what I do is I read through my CSV file. And each time I do that, I take the marker, which is in latitude, longitude, and add that to the URL. So basically, I'm constructing a URL here. And of course, it's zero-based, so I don't need to get row 0. I'm just getting row 1 and row 2. And once I have that, I'll print out my service URL. So let's go ahead and do that. And that was pretty quick. So if I have that, and I plug that in, voila, I get a static map. And you saw how quick that was. So that's a pretty good use case. And this would be common for, you know, Dick Smith, I suppose, or something like that. Do they have one in Des Moines? So now I'm going to talk about the store locator. So now we have that. You can obviously provide a mobile map. I think I have it here, but I'm not going to bother to show you all. But it's perfectly fitted for the screen. Say a user gives that somebody a lat long. How do we define, you know, how can we find out what the nearest store is? Obviously, you can do a lot of complex things, so that's up to you as far as your logic goes. And we have, in the JavaScript API, we have a directions library, which will do that, driving directions or walking directions. But we're just going to do a simple, what's the closest point as far as the crow flies. So what I'm going to do is combine the code that I've had today with this math here. So what I do is I import a math library. I define this calculate distance function, which is past two lat longs. Don't need to go through the math, but it'll basically return the distance between two latitude and longitude points on a sphere. I initially set closest match to none and the store lat long to 0, 0, and then I'll go through the store locations, and given a past lat long, I'll read through each time, and if I find a closest matched, I'll replace it. So let's see that in action. For, I think I defined Erskineville as that. Yeah, so Erskineville is where I currently live. So as you see, it went through that file, and it found out that Newtown is indeed the closest place to Erskineville, which I can confirm. Well, that's pretty cool, but, you know, can I do more? What about your JavaScript API? What happens if you have a site that has that? Do you want that to be slow? The thing is that I'm not even sure that we thought about this when we originally launched the static maps, but the static maps provide the ability to combine both APIs in a seamless fashion. So it's not just for static maps. What you can do is you can combine it with a JavaScript API. And what we're going to do here is provide for cases where you have mobile devices where the bandwidth is pretty slow and the map might take a long time to load, especially on JavaScript. So what we're going to do is we're going to load a static map first at the front, and then we're going to execute the similar JavaScript code to create the map behind the scenes. And once that map is ready, we're going to replace the static map with the JavaScript dynamic map. So how do you do this? So this actually gets a little bit more technical. One thing you do is, first of all, what we should do is you create a div for both the static map image and the JavaScript map as a div. If you're familiar with the JavaScript API, generally you create a div to hold your map. And once you actually initialize the map, the map will zap anything in that div and take over. So we're just going to have a div to hold both of those. We're going to create the static map in the JS with the same parameters, the same size, the same map type, the same markers. That's pretty important because you don't want to be just a little bit off. You want to provide the user a smooth experience. And we're going to load the JavaScript API last via a callback function. And this is not well documented, and that's my fault, so I'm going to be adding something here. Generally, when you load JavaScript in the browser, you load it up front. But for a page that's rather large and you don't need the JavaScript right away, you can pass parameters to the JavaScript API to load that JavaScript at the end of the page, basically after the body loads. That's pretty useful if you want to give the user something to look at right away. And that's the reason we do it here, because we're going to give the user a static map as soon as possible, and we're going to load the JavaScript API last. So if you pass async equals 2, and a callback function, that's how you get that behavior. Async equals 2 is just a little parameter that basically says load the JavaScript at the end. Once it's done, call this callback function. That allows us to define a bunch of code in that callback function that actually does the JavaScript loading. And then what we're going to do is we're going to add a listener to the JavaScript API, which provides a tiles loaded event. That event tells us that the tiles, the graphic images, have all come back from the server and are on the client. And once that happens, We're going to set the z-index of the static map to 0. So if you're familiar with CSS, you can set z-indexes, which will define the stacking order of overlays. So we're going to start out with a static map on top and the JavaScript loading underneath, and once the JavaScript is ready, we're just going to switch. So this is just an example of some of the code. So what we do is we name the static map different, of course. We create a div container, map container. We add this image. I give it an ID of static map. It's important that its position be absolute, not relative. Otherwise, you'll get a static map and then a JavaScript map below it. And then we define it as z-index higher than the JavaScript. So as you see there, the z-index for the JavaScript is 1, and the z-index for the static map is 2. And I didn't create the whole static map URL there. So what you do then is then you load the API at the end of the body via those two parameters. Async equals 2 tells the API to load after the body, and callback load map. You can call that callback anything you want, but that's what I used here. And that replaces the traditional body onload event, if you're familiar with the JavaScript API. So in the JavaScript, add a listener to the tiles loaded event, and that's that one line of code, which is gevent add listener on the map, tiles loaded, and then we'll remove the static map at that point. And what I've also done is in the remove, I basically set a timeout of 2 additional seconds, because once your images are ready, there's a little bit of flickering, so just make sure, and then it'll be completely seamless. We set that static map index to 0. So I'll give you a demo of that right now. So first I'm just going to load the JavaScript. So that loaded, and that loaded pretty quick. So that's pretty good. We got a pretty good connection here. But it can load even quicker. So as you see there, static map came up instantly. And the JavaScript loaded underneath. And then at some point, we got an interactive map. So this is pretty useful for especially for a home page where you want to provide the user something. In general, no one's going to, if you show somebody an initial map, no one's going to start interacting with it right away. They're usually going to take about 3 or 4 seconds just to look at what they're doing. So most users won't even know that you're actually doing this underneath the scenes. So it's a pretty neat technique to speed up your map or to speed up your home page. And I think that's about it. Let me see. Just want to check. I'm going to step through the code a little bit because that was a little bit complex to explain. That was probably the most complex part here. So this was the load map function that I talked about in the JavaScript. Don't worry if you don't know what this is, but this is pretty much standard JavaScript loading page JavaScript here. So we create a map. We set it center. We add the control. That map has the same center and zoom level that our static map does. And then we create a variety of an array to hold the store markers. That's the same as you saw in the CSV. If I were fancy here, I could get that fetched from a server, but I just put them in. And then I iterate over those and add those markers. So that's doing the same thing that the static map did. And then I add that listener, which is for the tiles loaded event, to remove the static map. And as you see, I added this little extra 1 second delay here just to make sure there's no flickering. In general, the tiles loaded event gets fired at the same time the last image is sent, but sometimes browsers render things in different orders, so the browser may not be quite as caught up as we'd like. So that's why I put that in there. You can probably adjust that a little bit based on your application. And then once we get that, we push the static image down, which is basically just setting its z-index to 0. So that wasn't a lot of code, and it wasn't that difficult to do. This is the actual HTML, which looks a little bit hairy, but is not that difficult to understand. Basically, you just have your... map and then FID. So I thought that was actually a pretty neat little technique once we figured that out. And that's kind of it. So if you wanted to create a mobile map, static maps are definitely a good way to have those show up initially and then have a dynamic map appear underneath. I'll open this up to questions now. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is tied to the domain. So you, well, they'll be connecting on your website. So if your website shows that, yeah. Any other questions? All right, want to get some tea? Feel free to come up afterwards and ask me other questions, even ones that aren't directly related to static maps.